Duke.
Why don't I think of something? Just.
Oh, great.
A second, what I do, Dan.
Well, that's important work.
The council will come to order. Carly, could you please call the roll?
Adams?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Sten?
Here.
Potter?
The mayor is absent at city business. And Carly, could you please read item 438?
Appeal of Dominic and Maria Corrado, applicant, against the hearing officer's decision stating that the zoning code requirements to create an open space track deprive them of rights protected under the U.S. Constitution for their application for a two-lot partition at 6917 Southwest 49th Avenue, LU07. 179-193 LDPEN.
Great. Lindley, do you want to walk through the rules and the procedure?
Sure. And I wish that on your last day I could give you the gift of not having to read all of these for you, but I can't. So.
I'll do it with special emotion today.
Yeah. And it's the thought that counts.
Maybe with an English accent.
Oh, you don't want that, really. This is an on-the-record hearing. This means you must limit your testimony to materials and issues in the record. During this hearing, you may only talk about the issues, testimony, exhibits, and other evidence that were presented at the earlier hearing before the hearings officer. You cannot bring up anything new. This hearing is designed only to decide if the hearings officer made the correct decision based on the evidence that was presented to him. If you start to talk about new issues or try to present new evidence today, you may be interrupted and reminded that you must limit your testimony to the record. We'll begin today with a staff report by the Bureau of Development Services staff for approximately 10 minutes. Following the staff report, council will hear from interested persons in the following order. The appellant will go first and have 10 minutes to present their case. Following the appellant, persons who support the appeal will go next. Each person will have 3 minutes to speak before council. The principal opponent, if there is one, will have 15 minutes to address council and rebut the appellant's presentation. After the principal opponent, the council will hear from persons who oppose the appeal. Those persons will also have 3 minutes each. Finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes to rebut any presentation of opponents of the appeal. Council may then close the hearing, deliberate, and take a vote on the appeal. If the vote is a tentative vote, council will set a future date for the adoption of findings and a final vote on the appeal. If the council takes a final vote today, that will conclude the matter before council. There are several guidelines. First, the evidentiary record is closed, so again, it's on the record. You must limit your remarks to testimony based on the record compiled by the hearings officer. You may refer to evidence that was previously submitted to the hearings officer. You may not submit new evidence today not submitted to the hearings officer. If your argument includes new evidence or issues, counsel will not consider it, and it will be rejected in the final decision. You may object to new evidence if you believe another person who addressed counsel today improperly presented new evidence. You may object to that today. Under state law, only issues raised before the hearings officer may be raised in the appeal to counsel. If you believe another person has raised issues today that were not raised before, you may object. And finally, if the applicant fails to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with enough specificity to allow counsel to respond, the applicant will be precluded from bringing an action for damages in circuit court to challenge the condition of approval.
Great, thank you. We'll start with the staff report.
Commissioner Sten, are there any ex parte contacts?
Does anyone have ex parte contacts they would like to? Appears there are not. Thank you. Would anybody like to challenge the council's lack of ex parte context? Okay, staff report.
I'm Kimberly Parsons, staff with the Bureau of Development Services, and this is the presentation for Appeal of Land Use Review 07-179193. LDPEN. The purpose of the hearing is to consider the appeal of the hearings officer decision to approve with conditions a two-lot partition and open space or environmental resource tract. The appellant is also the applicant, Dominic Corrado. Just a brief summary, the land division review is for a two-lot partition with a 16,557 square foot environmental resource tract. An environmental review was also requested for creation of the proposed partition and improvements. The environmental review was required because one of the proposed lots did not meet the required setback from the adjacent stream. The applicable approval criteria are listed in 33-660-120, approval criteria for land divisions, and 33-430-250A, environmental review approval criteria. So a summary of the hearings officer decision, he approved with conditions the two-lot partition with the creation of an environmental resource tract to be owned in common by the owners of the lots. There are also conditions of approval related to sanitary and storm sewer easements, water and fire bureau requirements, associated maintenance agreements for easements and tracts, mitigation plantings, and standards that will apply to development of the new lot. The site is located on Southwest 49th Avenue between Southwest Vermont and Southwest Texas. It's zoned R7, which is a medium density base zone, and has an environmental protection overlay zone. This protection zone provides the highest level of protection to important environmental resources and functional values. So you can see here the protection zone is over the southern half of the property and then along the western and northern edges. This is an aerial photo of the site. So you can see the property is currently developed with a house, and that will remain on proposed parcel one. There is an existing barn at the northern edge of the site that will be removed to accommodate development on parcel two. In blue, those are the streams that run along the northern and southern boundaries of this site and are located within the environmental protection zone. This slide shows the existing conditions plan and the environmental protection zone boundary in relation to the existing development. And then this is the preliminary plan, which shows the proposed lots, so parcels one and two, and the environmental resource tract, which is outlined in green. What's important to note here is that the proposed lots do not go into the resource area of the protection zone. They only extend in the transition area, which is what is typically allowed for development. And I'll go through some photos of the site here briefly. This is the front edge of the site on the right-hand side of the screen, and the improved portion of the street extends to the front of the house. Then this is the existing house to remain on parcel one. Then this is parcel two and the open space or the environmental resource tract. So the stream shown here is actually not on the applicant's property. It's on the adjacent property. And the lot line for this site falls approximately 5 feet to the right-hand side of the barn. And then this is the area of parcel two that will be developed. And then another photo, the protection zone. This is behind the existing house on the site. So Mr. Corrado listed the following points in his appeal statement: the requirements for creation of an environmental resource tract and that it be owned in common by the owners of the land division site deprive him of rights protected under the U.S. Constitution, including just compensation and equal protection. The tract and ownership requirements also violate Oregon Revised Statutes Chapter 35 by condemning property to convey to another private party. Or basically, he would be forced to jointly own the resource tract with the new owner of the other parcel. Just to provide some background on the issue, environmental development standards and approval criteria require resource areas of the protection zone to be placed entirely within resource tracts. The standards also require that the tracts must be owned in common by all the owners of the land division site, so in this case, owned in common by the owners of parcels one and two. The constitutional and condemnation appeal issues raised by the appellant regarding the creation and ownership of the environmental tract were not addressed in detail in the hearings office decision. The hearings officer determined that the appellant had not raised these issues with sufficient specificity. It is important to note that the city does not take title to the environmental resource tract at any point in time and does not require conveyance of land for public use. So whatever the council's decision is today, the hearings officer decision does need to be amended to address the appeal issues raised. There are several purposes for the tract and common ownership requirements for resource areas. One is that property owners are often not aware that an area on their property is in an environmental zone. There's nothing for them to refer to on their property deed that would describe where this area is. Environmental zone boundaries are difficult to determine on a property. There's nothing physical on the land that represents on the ground where that boundary lies. Attract better protects environmental resources by clearly identifying areas that can be developed and areas that cannot be developed. A property owner's deed description would identify the tract purpose and area, and maintenance agreements for the tract are recorded against the property and outline the uses and responsibilities for that area. There are often property markers on the site that also mark the boundaries of a lot and an environmental resource tract. And generally, common ownership of the tract by the Land Division lot owners provides greater protection by having multiple property owners invested in protecting the resource. Standards, including ownership of the tract, can be modified through environmental review. So to address the appellant's concerns, council could consider, and staff recommends, one of the following options. Create one environmental resource tract to be owned by one of the lot owners. So it could be specified that just parcel one would own the environmental resource tract. Or to create two environmental resource tracts with each tract owned by the adjacent lot owner. So parcel one would have a tract that it owned, and parcel two would have their own tract. Either alternative would meet the approval criteria that require creation of the environmental resource tract. And also, either alternative would provide a clear boundary of the area that is allowed to be developed, which is the lot, and the area that's required to be protected, which is the tract. So there are a number of options for council to consider. One is to deny the appeal and uphold the hearings officer decision for the two-lot partition with a commonly owned tract. You could deny the appeal and amend the hearings officer decision to approve a two-lot partition with one environmental resource tract owned by one of the lot owners. You could also provide a condition within this that would give the applicant the option to decide if they wanted one lot owner or two at the final plat stage. You could deny the appeal and amend the hearings officer decision to approve a two-lot subdivision with two environmental resource tracts, each owned by the adjacent lot owner. Or uphold the appeal, thereby overturning the hearings officer decision and allowing no environmental resource tract to be created. If you decide to uphold the appeal, I would request that you would call me back so that I could address some additional issues that are related to that final option. With any of the options, though, as I mentioned before, your decision will need to address the appeal issues that were raised since they weren't addressed in the hearings officer decision. And I do want to point out that the 120-day review period expires April 17th, so we would need to come back for a final adoption before that time. So that concludes my presentation. If you have any questions.
Great, thank you. Are there questions? I did have one. Is the hearings officer decision the same as the staff recommendation?
Yes, he followed staff's recommendation for a tract that's owned in common.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Not to the extent of the issues raised on appeal with respect to the constitutional issues, which staff has just recommended two different alternatives.
Right. Those two options were not addressed in the hearings officer decision.
Thank you.
All right.
So we'll hear from the appellants. You've been working on this for a long time, so perhaps it'll
remember me.
Yes, had an earlier hearing. And
hello, my name is Dominic Corrado, 6917 Southwest 49th Avenue, Portland, and I am the appellant. And if you'll indulge me for just one moment, I would like to offer my congratulations to Commissioner Stinn on his impending retirement, and best of luck to you in the future, and thank you for your hard work with the commission in the past. It was kind of a poignant moment downstairs. As I was waiting for the chambers to open, there's a plaque there rededicating this building almost exactly 10 years ago, 3/30/1998, and it listed the mayor and commissioners, and you're the last man standing on
that
plaque. So does it really seem like 10 years?
No.
Yeah. I'd also like to thank the commission for the opportunity to air my grievances in this case, and I'd particularly like to thank Kim Parsons, who's been working with this with me for a number of years. I started this land partition in 2004, so this has been going on for a while, and she has been very helpful, and her guidance has been very, very useful. In fact, couldn't have gotten this far without it. I'd also like to congratulate her on her impending move to a new and higher position with the staff. So I'm here today to seek a fair solution to what I believe is an unconstitutional condition on my land use decision. My position is informed by the purpose of the takings clause, which is to prevent the government from forcing some people alone to bear public burdens which, in fairness and justice, should be borne by the public as a whole. Under the well-settled doctrine of unconstitutional conditions, the government may not require a person to give up a constitutional right, here the right to receive just compensation when property is taken for the public good, in exchange for a discretionary benefit conferred by the government where the property sought has little or no relationship to the benefit. The benefit I seek is permission to divide my existing lot into two lots. The city has conditioned that benefit on the requirement that I relinquish title and fee simple ownership on 49% of my property to create the environmental tract. The city is imposing the condition without making any individualized determination that the required dedication is related in nature and extent to the impact of the proposed development. There's a test for an unconstitutional condition that asks three questions, and if the government can answer yes to all three, then there is no unconstitutional condition and no payment required. Simply, is there a legitimate government purpose to support the imposition of the condition? Second, is there an essential nexus between the legitimate government purpose and the condition imposed? And third, is there a rough proportionality between the condition imposed and the impacts of the development, both in nature and extent? It's also settled that the burden is on the government body imposing the condition to establish that the conditions are not taking under the above analysis. So the suggestion that I may not have made my arguments before the hearing officer with sufficient specificity is somewhat moot, because it would have been the burden of staff to show that its requirement was not an unconstitutional condition. In addition, particularized findings are required. In other words, there needs to be an individualized determination specific to my land use decision, not a broad brush regulation that is intended to apply to all land divisions. So going back over these tests, is there a legitimate government purpose for the condition? Well, yes, there is. It is important to protect the resource area, and I'm not arguing against that. Is there a nexus between the legitimate government purpose and the condition imposed? Not necessarily, because the form of ownership in no way changes the environmental regulations that already exist on the property. The existing regulations in place now, and that would follow the property to whatever ownership it may have in the future, are the regulations that protect the environmental zone. So is there rough proportionality between the condition imposed and the impacts of development, both in nature and extent? And here I would say clearly no. As stated above, the environmental overlay regulations protect the resource area regardless of property title. The forced change in ownership is designed solely to prevent any future development of the property, even though current regulations would allow further division and development on the property. The city has identified no special benefits conferred to me for relinquishing half of my property, and it has not identified any special quantifiable burdens created by a simple partition of my property that would justify the dedications demanded from me, and which are not required from the public at large when they go to do a land division of their property. Settled law, as I mentioned earlier, places the burden on government to establish that the conditions are not a taking under the above analysis. Furthermore, the government must do so with an individualized determination that goes beyond the conclusory statements that have been offered so far. As staff offered earlier, and as was offered during the hearings, when the hearings officer asked for the rationale behind the creation of the environmental zone tracts, that homeowners were not often aware of the disturbance areas that were allowed on their property, and this led to violations, which in turn led to the regulation to impose a demand that property be turned into an environmental zone tract on a land division. It's interesting to note that the hearings officer further asked that if in the 5 years since the environmental tract requirement was adopted, has it affected the number of environmental violations the city has received? And staff didn't have any firm numbers on that that would support that position. So I would say that by staff's own admission, the environmental regulations were effective in the past in finding and controlling violations prior to the imposition of the environmental tract requirement. But after 5 years, no evidence can be offered that the requirement to form a separate tract through a forced change of ownership has reduced the number of violations. Without question, had the city simply required me to relinquish half of my property rather than conditioning the grant on a favorable land use decision, a taking would have occurred. In other words, if 5 years ago, before I had even started the land division process, I got a knock on the door from city saying, well, we've decided that the 49% of your property that lays within the environmental zone needs to be relinquished from your ownership and placed into a different form of ownership where something less than fee simple, regardless, one of the options is that it go into the ownership of a city or government agency or a nonprofit organization. The least onerous under this condition of approval is that it be put into joint ownership with the participants in the land division. In any case, that is a diminution of my fee simple property ownership rights. And if that had happened, not conditioned on a land use decision, it would clearly be a taking. So now we have to ask ourselves, okay, is imposing that condition as part of a land use decision to receive a benefit, is that a constitutional or an unconstitutional condition? And I think I have made the argument that it's not constitutional, that it is an unconstitutional condition. So as mentioned earlier, I think this also runs afoul of ORS Chapter 35 as amended by Measure 39 a few years ago that essentially says that you cannot condemn property without due process where the city intends to convey fee title to all or a portion of the real property or a lesser interest than fee title to another private property. So those are my concerns, and I think that staff has outlined a number of options here. I would obviously be happiest with the last of those four options, which was to not have to create an environmental zone tract at all. But I would be amenable to discussing some other arrangement that would allow separate E-zone tracts that could follow title of each individual parcel in the future and not place either owner in a position of having to share responsibility for a larger environmental tract, portions of which can't be seen from one or the other of the properties. So in closing, I would just like to say that there was in a Supreme Court decision on this matter, it closed by saying we're in danger of forgetting that a strong public desire to improve the public condition is not enough to warrant achieving the desire by a shorter cut than the constitutional way of paying for the change. With that, I will close and ask if you have any questions.
I do. Mm-hmm. So, Mr. Corrado, you finally got to what the staff was recommending, which mm-hmm. I appreciate. Had you seen that before today? The two options, the one being that the create one environmental resource tract that is owned by one property owner, or two environmental resource tracts, each owned by the adjacent property owner. Have you seen that before?
Yes.
And did I understand you to say that you would be acceptable to either of those? You'd prefer to have the latter rather than the former?
That it was item four, I think, on the list, right? The one that would just create two lots and no environmental tract.
Of the two options I just read to you,
those were a single tract and two tracts. The second option would be preferable. That's right.
So that each tract went with the adjacent property owner.
That's correct.
And you would find that acceptable?
I would.
Thank you.
Great. Any further questions? Thank you. We'll now hear from supporters of the appeal. Would anybody like to, did anybody sign up, or would anybody like to testify?
No one signed up.
Okay. So I think we don't have anybody in opposition to the appeal, I don't believe. So let's bring staff back up, and we'll open this up to council discussion.
So I actually was hoping to get the, I was trying to write as fast as I could when I saw it on the screen. What I got down in the second option that you offered was amending the hearings officer report with language that said that we would create two environmental resource tracts with each owned by the adjacent owner.
Yes, that's
there it is,
just,
right there.
I just pulled it up for you.
Deny the appeal and amend the hearings officer decision to approve a two-lot subdivision with two mineral resource tracts. That one. Is that the right language for the second option that you proposed? The third bullet?
The third bullet, yeah.
Okay. I'm prepared to make a motion.
Further questions? Let's have the motion.
I'd move to deny the appeal and amend the hearings officer's decision to approve a two-lot subdivision with two environmental resource tracts, each owned by the adjacent lot owner.
Have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Roll call.
Commissioner, may I remind the council that staff had requested that it be a tentative vote because revised findings and conditions of approval would need to be drafted and brought back to council probably the morning of April 16th, which is 2 weeks and before the 120-day period.
Commissioner Lender, would you be open to including that language in your motion?
I would.
So ordered. Roll call.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Appreciate your thoughtful arguments.
Aye.
Sten?
Hope you can get something built. No, good job. Aye. And we'll schedule a date to bring this back, Carla?
It'll be April 16th at 10:30, time certain.
Will that work for the 120 days in planning?
Yes.
Terrific. The council is adjourned.
We give you a hand again.
Congratulations.
Great working with you for 10 years.
Freedom.
Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah, right.
My one regret is not to serve.
He's made the other side.
Mayor.
Oh.
Nice job.
Yeah, thank you. Feels weird.
I'm exceedingly jealous.
It hasn't really sunk in.
I can just imagine.
Yeah, just like.